Hey, it's Tony. If you're hearing this, it means that Nigel has flushed the mouse and forgot to have me record something new. So who knows who our guests will be today? Maybe Mick Jagger, Sandy Koufax, Dalai Lama, long hitter the Lama. Probably not, but I guess you'll have to tune in to find out. But first, let's keep the sales weasels happy.
Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
And he said, you know, I could really catch a ground ball and I could really throw, but I couldn't hit at all. And I had to quit baseball saying, this is way too hard for me to play.
Well, the ball's stationary in golf. You don't have to worry about somebody sweeping it past you. It's stationary.
Right. And Tony, you don't have to worry about getting killed on the golf course. At least I don't. But when you step into the box every night and someone is buzzing the tower at 98 miles an hour, the fear of God goes through your head.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
Love that phrase, buzzing the tower at 98 miles an hour. I'd never heard that before.
No, that was good.
Loved it. Good.
I was hoping Kurt was going to give us a, Mr. Gilmore, I'm your caddy.
You know, just great. And Tim's voice is, of course, extraordinary.
Yes.
My thanks to Ralph Bizarro, the oddly named Ralph Bizarro in Holly Springs, North Carolina, for a lovely note. Thank you very, very much. And a note from Peter Jennings, not that Peter Jennings. This assumes, it says, tomorrow, Monday, is going to be the greatest Dr. Tony opening rant in show history. This assumes that the beloved host is not in the ICU or has not been arraigned on charges of menacing the Nats bullpen. Cancel any guests. Just do a full episode on the Nats weekend. So, look, I did not watch yesterday. I watched the previous two games. The Yankees swept the Nats, and they swept them in the exact same way that the Phillies did, you know, a few weeks ago.
How many total innings do you think the Yankees had the lead?
Three or four.
If we count up all the outs.
Three or four. That's all it is. The Nats are an improving team. They are better this year than last year. They have a much better offense this year than last year. Their bullpen is horrific. It stinks beyond any, like my anger at Jose Tena, because he strikes out all the time and wastes challenges. You hear that in my voice. I cannot accurately. My anger is sometimes at Dylan Cruz. Jacob Young would have had that catch yesterday.
Dylan Cruz is getting protection by the bullpen.
You know, he's, yeah. Dylan Cruz, the number two overall
pick. First and third, no outs.
He strikes out a lot or grounds into double plays a lot. You know, I got Tena, I got Vivas, I got Cruz. It just, you know, it's not there. But nothing compares to how terrible the bullpen is. This happened with the Philadelphia Phillies in Nats Park, the top of the ninth, three straight games, right?
Mm-hmm.
They got 100 runs. The amount of runs that the Nats bullpen gives up in top eight, bottom eight, top eight, top nine has to be the worst in baseball. It has to be. They lose all these games. They have leads. They had leads in the Phillies games. They had leads in the Yankees games. Each day they had leads. They had leads late, right, Michael?
Yes.
Late in the game and
not
each
big
time.
Not leads, but leads.
Leads, not huge. Now, one of the reasons they don't have huge leads is because, and C.J. Abrams is having an all-star season and is going to start at shortstop. The other night he struck out with bases loaded, right?
Yep.
They don't. Although they score a lot of runs, they don't often have that big breakout inning when they have runners in scoring position that puts the game out of reach, though God knows nothing is out of reach with the Nats bullpen. But they, and Dylan Cruz has done the same thing, strike out with a whole bunch of people on. The most wonderful surprise of the season is Meade. Meade gets up there, even pinch hitting home runs. Meade is the great surprise of the season so far, correct?
Mm-hmm. See you know, later, Meade.
And the rest of it, I mean, Wood has been terrific, and Abrams has produced a lot of runs, and Luis Garcia lately has looked like Roberto Clemente. And I mean, he's driving.
Woods giving you a, he's giving you a 1-0 lead in the bottom of the first.
Yeah, so it's it falls on the bullpen. I don't want to be overly critical of the baby manager, but I think sometimes there's a certain scripting to the way the Nats play by Toboni and by Butera, and they want to get people up in a certain spot. And they want to get pitchers in a certain spot. They want, with pitching, you want lefty-lefty or righty-righty. With hitting, you want lefty-righty, righty-lefty. But it's, we have seen it not work against good teams. So the takeaway here, and I know I'm speaking for Chuck Todd, and I'm speaking for Chris Saliza, and I'm speaking for Tom Jones, not that Tom Jones. The takeaway is the Nats are not a good team. They're an improving team.
Correct.
They've been better this year than anyone ever expected.
Oh, sure.
All praise for that. But when they come up against a good team in a critical situation, they don't win.
Yeah, this was a helpful three-week lesson for that. I think my only issue with your point about the way they manage a game is you're not just trying to manage the back end. They have to look at it from the front because they have the opener situation as well,
yeah.
And they've just been so decimated when it comes to their available pitchers. So however bad it could be, it probably could be even worse.
They must have I'm going to take a chance on this. Maybe somebody can find out for me. I believe they have used more pitchers in relief this year than any other team in the majors. They've had 20 guys go through. There are people who get up there on the mound, and I watch, and I go, who's this person? A lot of relief pitchers. A lot of relief.
I don't trust this stat. I got a quick AI overview saying 14 different pitchers, but that seems kind of low.
Low, that's low. 14 in relief, that's low. They have people, honestly, they get in the game and go, You know, it's sort of like I want to call Coco and say, where's this guy from?
And I know in baseball, we often want to come back to like, hey, that, you know, play to the back of your baseball card and, you know, you sort of discount momentum. Or this actually just feels like the script has been written.
I mean, the next half of the season, we'll see. I don't know if they'll be buyers or sellers. They haven't been buyers in many, many years, so I don't think they're going to be buyers, but we'll see what happens.
But as you said, it's been a wonderful surprise. I mean, you didn't expect to be this.
They're in games.
Yeah.
They used to be not in games. They used to be, by this point, they were 15 to 20 below 500. And they're one below at this point
at
the All-Star break.
And part of this now with the extra wild card, however many years we're into that now, like we are likely not going to be buyers. But because so many teams still feel like there is a chance and their fans feel that, like it's still fun. It will be fun to watch throughout the rest of the summer.
Sure. We're going to talk about this tomorrow because we'll have a baseball guest on tomorrow. We do not have a baseball guest on today. But we're going to have to talk about Christopher Sanchez and Zach Wheeler of the Phillies. Christopher Sanchez is going to start this game tomorrow night, and deservedly so. He went through a period of time where he threw over 50 innings and did not allow an earned run. He has earned this on every level.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know about Dylan Cease having earned it at Toronto, but he almost had a no-hitter the other day, and he's a quality pitcher who no-hit the Yankees a year or two ago.
They should just send out the entire Phillies at this point, put them in their blue jerseys. I mean, the Homer
game's
Derby
in Philadelphia.
Should just be
Schwarber
and Harper.
That's all it should be.
Yeah.
That's all it should be.
I'll bring it back to Nats Park.
Yeah, exactly. You know. Former Nats.
So,
well, the finals as well.
Zach Wheeler is now 10-1 on the year. He has thrown three straight games where he struck out 10 or more people. And he was very upset the other day. Not yesterday, after he did it again, after the second game, when he struck out 14, he was not on the All-Star team. And he launched a tirade about not being on the All-Star team. So baseball did what it should have done. Baseball extended an invitation to Zach Wheeler to be on the All-Star game. He said, shove it. He said, no. You have disrespected me. No, I'm not going to do it. We'll ask whoever is our guest tomorrow about that. My own feeling about that is a big bravado move. And I get it. Makes you feel good.
Yeah. But then he quietly accepted it.
But he should have accepted it.
Yes.
He should have gone out there in his home park in front of mainly his home fans and thrown one inning. He should, I believe.
Although it'd be a very Philly thing to do alternate programming, go outside, do like a baseball card signing thing.
You know, but I think he should have done that. But we'll ask whoever our guest is.
Go to Chickie and Pete's.
Would you, what do you think on that?
You make the comment, but you accept.
Yeah.
You have to. I mean, in the moment, yeah, it feels great.
They are acknowledging the mistake that they have made.
Yeah.
What more do you want?
Yeah. Now it's too late now. You lost your chance. I'm gone. Yeah. It's just.
I didn't like that. So let me go to Wimbledon because we're not going to discuss Wimbledon on this show today. And if it was up to me, we wouldn't even discuss it on the PTI show because it was while both finals matches were fine.
Yeah.
They held your attention. They went more than straight sets. They weren't like the way Djokovic went out in the semis in straight sets, 4-4. And it wasn't like that. Djokovic was never really in that match. I mean, Sinner controlled that match. Sinner beat Zverev.
Yeah.
He beat him. He lost the first set, and it went three more. Sinner's a significantly better player than Zverev. Zverev's a fine player. He won the French Open. He's a top five player. Sinner and Alcaraz are separate from these people. And they are not run-of-the-mill people.
No.
But Sinner and Alcaraz are, they look like Federer and Nadal at the moment.
Yeah.
They look that good. Now, Alcaraz has not been able physically to compete in the French Open or Wimbledon. I don't know about the U.S. Open. I mean, I don't know if this is an injury that will plague him forever and take away his greatness. But he is great, and Sinner is great. Sinner has now beaten Zverev 10 straight times.
Yeah.
We say that's domination, Holmes. 10 straight times.
It's getting into Gerulaitis territory, right?
Yeah.
Nobody beats Vitas Gerulaitis 17 straight times.
Except, yeah, right, 16. Only 16 straight times. And in the women's final, it didn't have a great attraction because these are unknown people. They're terrific tennis players, both from the Czech Republic, Mahuva and Naska.
Right? Naskova. Yeah.
And
it was nice to see
it went three sets.
Yeah.
I didn't have the winner. I thought Mahuva would win after beating Coco Gauff. She didn't win. And Naskova was, I think tennis people would say, significantly better.
Yeah.
And threw away the second set. Didn't get beat, threw the set away, and then won in the third set. But as with women's tennis in the last 4 or 5 years, other than Sabalenka and Swiatek, there is a parade of people getting to finals and winning finals in majors where you go, who's that?
Right, yeah.
And then they don't come back.
Yeah.
They don't get back in the next two or three. And you go, well, what happened? So it's one of the reasons I suspect Venus Williams is considering, Serena Williams, rather, is considering extending this comeback and being serious about it.
Right.
It's because I suspect she feels I can win.
Yeah.
I can win. Other than a couple of players who are out there who are better than her. Doesn't mean you meet them in every tournament.
Exactly.
Doesn't mean that's the way it works because they lose too. Swiatek and Sabalenka, they go out before the finals.
Yeah.
They're going out in the quarters and they're going out in the semis. So that happens.
Just one note about Alcaraz. I was reading last night. I was like, when is he coming back? He's going to miss the, I think it's the Montreal Open, and he's hoping to go to the Western Southern, I think in Cincinnati. Is that where that is?
Okay, but he wants to play in the U.S. Open.
Yeah, wants to play, but there's now serious doubts.
This is a wrist injury?
Yes, there's serious doubts he might not play at all this year.
This is his right wrist.
Yes.
Wrist he uses to hit the ball.
It's kind of important.
Yeah, so this could actually be a career-ending injury.
Clearly, it's very serious because they're just taking their time on this, make sure he doesn't, aggravate it.
Tom Kim won the Scottish Open. I didn't see that coming. But Tom Kim's a good player. Yeah. And Tom Kim in bedsheet golf, people love him. He's very demonstrative. I mean, he's a very popular guy in the bedsheet golf classic. I sort of thought...
What team is he on?
I don't know the names of any of the teams.
Throw it out there.
I don't have any idea. Sort of thought that Rory McIlroy, after the first day, was going to win
this
tournament.
Did you see when he chunked a wedge shot earlier in the weekend?
He said, I stink at golf at some point. We should all stink that bad. Which reminds me, I did play 16 holes yesterday. I stopped after 16. It slowed
down.
Glad
you got out. I'm glad you got
out. Yeah, and it was really good. There were matches in front of us. We were two, and we were four. We were four for the first nine. We played with a couple who were just learning to play. It was totally delightful, Chris and Janet, to play with them. You know, they struggled. And Chris,
did you give them a lesson out of the bunker?
I don't give anybody lessons, but he takes a shot that won't help him get out of the bunker. He takes a half swing. You have to take a full swing to get out of the bunker. Very nice guy. In actually his cybersecurity. So he explained things to me that I had no knowledge
probably
of.
It terrified you.
It did terrify me, but it was nice to learn a little bit. And then we got behind two matches, two-man matches. And so that slowed everything down, and I left after 16. But I played.
When you're driving in, did you see the bounce house being put up?
I did not see that. But the kids loved that last night. They loved that. So I played with a fellow named Steve Robinson, who I had not met before, who was an airline pilot. And so I had obviously a lot to talk.
Sure.
And a graduate of the Air Force Academy.
Oh, wow.
So I had a lot to talk about. I thoroughly enjoyed playing with him. He's significantly younger than I am. Like 6 or 7 or 8 years or something like that.
Did you pick up any feathers on the back nine?
I did not see any feathers. No, I would have picked them up and put them in the bag. I basically have a a down jacket in my bag because I have so many feathers that I pick up because I think it's lucky to pick up the goose feathers.
Yeah.
He's a quick player. He puts his club behind the ball. He doesn't even take a practice swing.
Love it.
He hits the ball and hits it well. I enjoyed myself very much playing with him. So we had some things in common, and that was fun. Not getting out this week because, you know, in terms of announcing the schedule, we're going to do the podcast Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday this week.
That's right.
Because Thursday and Friday I'm playing in a member guest, and so I want to be able to play because it starts at 8. So I have to. I'm not doing the podcast at 5.
You only have to get there for breakfast.
Well, yes, I get there for breakfast and like to take breakfast sandwiches with me in the golf cart.
Nothing says food safety like a breakfast sandwich to go.
Gets cold quickly and it's awful, but it gives
it
me some
dash.
It gives me something to do. I reach in, and I eat a bite here and a bite there. Yeah. I like to do that. All right, so we will get started with the show. We have Frank Isola on later in the show and Greg Cody to talk about all things Miami other than Lebatard. Right now, I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This music is sent us by Tim Raderstorf in Columbus, Ohio. It's someone he knows pretty well, Jill Miglick, who's a soccer coach as well as a singer and a songwriter. This is a song called Oyster. This is her first song. She'll play another song later, and she plays in Greg Cody. Greg, are you still writing for the Miami Herald?
Yes, I am, sir.
You're getting to be the oldest person writing. That's good. You should want to do that. I'm the oldest person working. You can be the oldest person writing. And nothing wrong
yes,
with that.
Yes, I am.
That's good.
I still write. I still chip my columns onto a tablet and then send it to the Herald. So we're a little old fashioned here, but I'm still writing. Not much. I've cut back a little bit. I'm writing like two columns a week, but yeah, we're still doing it.
That's good. That's good to know. So I have 1,000 Miami questions, but the first Miami question doesn't have to do with Miami sports as much as it has to do with what you did the other day. Miami hosted the England-Norway game, and you went to that, right?
Yeah, I was at the game. It was a thrill. We've hosted 6 World Cup games so far. We've got 1 left, so Miami's been a big part of this. It's been fun.
Do you like soccer? Are you a soccer guy? I'm not a soccer guy. Are you a soccer guy?
Yeah, I'm very much a soccer guy. I played soccer through college age, actually.
Really?
I must say that's much more impressive than it sounds because I was the backup goalie on a college club team.
Right.
So we had uniforms and we went to road games, but I hardly played. And the only game I started, I lost 6-1. However, I love soccer. I covered the Fort Lauderdale Strikers way back in the North American Soccer League days in the late 70s and early 80s. So I go way back with the sports.
So, I mean, my problem, and Wilbon loves it too, or at least claims to love it, to know the temperature of the entire world by watching soccer. My problem is the same problem that a lot of people have, that they don't really try to score all that often, and, you know, and they don't use their hands. And, like, I couldn't cut meat if I didn't use my hands. So I think my hands are very valuable. But I'm glad you like it. Later in the show, Isola is going to be on. He was a backup player at University of Maryland. I mean, he played it all the way through. Did they, you know what surprised me? And I'm going into this with absolutely no knowledge, which is, very much what I do all the time. But what surprised me when I saw England and Norway in Miami, I would have thought if they had a chance to put Argentina in Miami or Spain in Miami or earlier in the tournament, Brazil in Miami, they would have done that. Was there, did you have games among Spanish-speaking teams which makes sense in Miami?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, yeah. Actually, England, Norway, and Miami was sort of an anomaly. It was probably the whitest crowd I've ever seen at any sporting event. But earlier in the event, Miami's first match was Uruguay, and we had Columbia play a match down here. Columbia is insane. We have like 150 or 15,000 Colombians living in South Florida, so that was a crazy game. And then Argentina did play one of its knockout games in Miami earlier in July. So we've had three South American teams play here. This just happened to be England and Norway.
I should ask you, because you're a soccer person, do you have a winner in this thing? Do you say this is the best team and they should win?
Yeah, France has been the best team I've seen by a lot. I think France is a clear favorite. I think they're going to beat Spain on Tuesday in one semifinal, and then Argentina and England play in the Wednesday semifinal, and that's the one I really, really want to see, because England has a great squad, and as we saw the other night with Harry Kane, their top player, had an off game, but Jude Bellingham filled in with two goals, and the crowd serenaded him by singing "Hey Jude" after the game. It was pretty cool.
Nice.
It was great. And of course, Argentina has Lionel Messi, who's just beyond compare. He's the goat of goats, and this would be his last World Cup game if he loses, because he's 39 years old, and you can't imagine him playing in 4 years. So this is the swan song for the greatest ever, potentially. So it's going to be a great Tuesday and Wednesday for soccer.
So I don't, again, know much about it, but after the games, I see the players embrace, and this happens in all sports, but it always strikes me that it is a little bit more sincere in soccer, because I think a lot of these guys play on the same teams in professional leagues, right? I mean, they know each other really well.
Yeah. The top World Cup players are playing in the English Premier League, or playing in South America or in Europe. Including some of the U.S. players.
Some of them
play in MLS in the American League. But yeah, they play each other. It's like during an All-Star game. You know, during the baseball All-Star game. You know, you've got the NL team, but all these guys play each other from, you know, Cubs and Padres and all this. Yeah. So it's the same in international football.
All right, let me shift gears completely. A story that I'm interested in: Bam Adebayo and Tyler Hero. Bam Adebayo, what I read, punched Tyler Hero a couple of times. These guys played together not for an hour and a half. They played for some years at Miami Heat. What happened there? And was it expected?
It certainly wasn't expected. You know, they played 6-7 years together, and you know, suddenly they're ex teammates and instant enemies. It was a weird story. They, you know, the NBA Summer League just started in Las Vegas, and they were both out there because that's what NBA players do. They get a lot of disposable income, so they fly all around doing God knows what. And so they bumped into each other in a gym at a casino. You know, why casinos have basketball gyms is a whole different story. But they bumped into each other, and apparently Tyler Hero had been betrayed by a fan. Tyler Hero was DMing, direct messaging on social media with a fan, and apparently said a couple of things that were a little critical of Bam, thinking it was just a private exchange with a fan. Well, the fan apparently publicized that, and Bam got wind of it or saw it, and apparently Tyler had, you know, thrown a little shade at Bam, saying, you know, he's not quite the defensive star everybody makes him out to be, and Miami loved Bam more than they loved me. And he just said a couple of things that Bam took as negative. And so they got into a little physicality when they saw each other. I wasn't there, but from everything I've heard and talked to a couple of people, apparently Bam just sort of slapped him, you know, just got a little physical with him. And I don't know that it's going to carry over. Tyler Hero was interviewed later that same day and, you know, didn't have any bruises and seemed fine. So I think it's going to blow over, but it was sort of a weird, bizarre incident, wasn't it?
Both of them are very popular, right? And there was no indication that they had any bad blood, correct?
That's correct. Yes. Both very popular. Once Jimmy Butler left, they were the two biggest stars on the team for a couple of years. And And, you know, Tyler Herro made an all-star team. Bam's made the all-stars. They're both very good players. And there was never an indication down here that that they had any bad blood whatsoever. So it was weird.
Yeah, Bama had like 84 points earlier this year. I mean, it's the most surprising amount of points by a player in the history of the league. I mean,
that was crazy. Okay.
Yes.
That was absolutely crazy.
Who did he get them against again? Oh,
you know
I
what?
Think it was
I
Washington.
Yeah.
I thought it was Washington. I thought, I thought it's not a real team, not against a real team.
Right.
Okay. Exactly. Well, the genesis of this, of course, is that Miami has acquired Giannis Antetokounmpo. Are people excited about that?
Yes. Yes. After what seems like 3 or 4 years of attempting to sign Giannis, they finally got him, and they're finally introducing him this Thursday. They haven't had the intro press conference yet. They're finally having that.
Really?
Along with finally. So, along with Bobby Portis, who also came in the trade. Imagine being Bobby Portis at the press conference for Giannis. You know, somebody's going to.
The only question, the only question Bobby Portis will get is one, what's your name again? And two, could you get out of the line of sight so that we could see the other guy? That's all that's going to be said to him, right? That's
right. And if there's time for a third question, it would be, what do you think of the Heat getting Giannis Antetokounmpo?
That's right. Exactly right. You and I could script this press conference. It'd be really good. So I pay attention. I'm like one of those sad old men who pays attention to baseball. And earlier in the year, the Marlins swept the Nats, and the Nats were playing really well. And the Marlins, in my mind, are awful because they've been awful for a long time. They don't spend any money, and they stink. They always have one or two good pitchers, and that's all they have.
Right.
Well, all of a sudden, they're good. They're actually playoff good, correct? What is going on with that?
Yes. It's the craziest story other than Bam slapping Tyler Herro. It's probably the craziest story in South Florida right now. Unfortunately, because of the World Cup and because of Giannis, nobody's paying attention to the Marlins, but it is. It's a big story. They lost their last three games going into the All-Star break, but they still have a 26-11 record since June 1st, which I think is the best in MLB. Yeah, they've been, you know, they've got three quality starting pitchers. They have two All-Stars. They have players you've never heard of who are having big seasons, and they are defying the fact that they have the cheapest owner in sports, and they're playing budget ball. You know, they've started to hit home runs. They steal bases. They're a fun team. You know, they brand themselves the Fightin' Fish, and, you know, they're actually starting to draw more than 8,000 fans a game. It's been pretty remarkable down here.
Yeah, I mean, if you think your stadium is empty sometimes, like the Nats when Houston came in and nobody was there. Just take a look at Miami. Miami, nobody's at Miami. And yet the thing that was in the news about the Miami Marlins lately and over the last month in the national news was they pulled the kid when he had a perfect game through seven. What were your thoughts about that?
Oh, my God, yeah, Yuri Perez. Perfect game. You know, I argue this on the Levitard show and on my own podcast. It's ridiculous to just follow the book and say, all right, we have a 4% more chance of winning right now if we make a move and go to the bullpen. When you've got a chance for a perfect game, there have only been like 20 in Major League history.
24, all time. Yeah. 24, that's it. Yeah.
You've got to give this kid a chance to make history. He's six outs away. He's thrown less than 100 pitches. It's not like his arm's falling off. I think they just made a terrible mistake, and it almost backfired. The bullpen blew up. They ended up winning 9-8. But, I thought that was a bad mistake. This kid was six outs from history. Let him go try to get it.
Did the general manager or manager address that, not that day, but say 2 or 3 days later as people continued to talk about it?
Yeah, they did. And you know, the manager basically says this was the right way to go. Basically, you know, they're a big analytics team, the Marlins.
So are the Nats.
That's one of the excuses that they don't spend a lot of money on players as well. We're smarter than other teams. We do all this analytics. And so I think they're a slave to that, and I think that's what happened here. But, you know, if it's just a no-hitter, I say go to the bullpen. No-hitters now are pretty common, but a perfect game, man, that's so rare. You got to let them get it.
I agree with that. All right, I'll get you out of here on this. For years, the greatest attraction in the Miami area is the Dolphins. I mean, they were an early dynasty, and they got cool uniforms, and everybody likes the Dolphins. They got rid of the quarterback. They got rid of the coach. It appears to be an utter reset there. Do you like this? Do you have optimism about it, or are you angry about it?
No, I like it. It had to happen. You know, for years they've been just starting and restarting, you know, and never really having a plan. And once it was obvious that Tua Tagovailoa wasn't the guy, I think they needed a complete reboot, and that's what they're doing. I've been pretty impressed with Jeff Hafley, the new head coach who's from Green Bay. He seems to have had a good offseason. The only money they spent was on Malik Willis, the quarterback for the time being. You know, if they're as bad as everybody says, they could get the number one draft pick next spring and probably probably the latest Manning, you know, Arch Manning would be the guy probably. But, I think they needed to make the reboot. I think even fans are resigned to the fact, okay, let's have a terrible season or two and then let's finally be good again. Because this team, the franchise of Don Shula and Dan Marino, hasn't made the playoffs for the longest run in the NFL since
is that right?
In more than a quarter of a century. It's embarrassing.
Wow.
And as you say, this is the flagship franchise in South Florida, and they, you know, they just have to find a way to be good again.
Yeah, I mean, you can talk about any other sport you want, but it's the Miami Dolphins. That's an automatic. Greg, thanks. Say hi to Levitard for us. Thank you very much.
Yeah, anytime, Tony. Thank you.
Greg Cody, boys and girls, we will take a break. We will come back with Frank Isola. We'll talk a little bit about soccer with Frank. I am Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
And this is a song from Jill Miglick. And Tim Raderstorff in Columbus, Ohio writes, the pride of Grandview FC fifth grade girls soccer coaching staff, singer-songwriter Jill Miglick released her latest album, Ignite, on July 10th. She's an Ohio-based singer-songwriter whose music blends heartfelt storytelling with relatable moments, drawing inspiration from Kacey Musgraves, Noah Kahan, and Miley S- one of them. This is a song called Airport Wishlist on an album called Oyster, and we're happy that Jill Miglick, you know, gave up soccer coaching briefly to record an album.
Yeah.
Michael, if people like Jill want to send their original music in, how do they do it?
Send us music by emailing it to jingles@tonykornheiser.com.
And she plays in.
Knew you were a big Kacey Musgraves
fan. Frank Isola. Isola is doing us an incredible favor. We have always talked to Taylor Twellman about soccer. But Taylor Twellman, I think this past weekend, played in one of those celebrity tournaments in Lake Tahoe. And we haven't reached him. And, you know, why should he talk to us? He's in a tournament.
Sure.
And Frank is being nice enough to do this. And you say, well, why do you want to talk to Frank about soccer? Because, kids, Frank played soccer in college. A real college. The University of Maryland. Frank, do you want to tell the people what you did in soccer at Maryland?
I did basically nothing. I certainly didn't do what your guy Taylor Twellman did. I always joke with him that he broke all my records because we went to the same school. So I walked on, but once he scored his first goal, he had broken any record that I had set at Maryland. So they were nice enough to give me brand new cleats. That was nice enough.
Wait, so you never scored for Maryland?
That's not, Tony, it's not easy to score.
Right, that's what I was going to ask. I was going to ask that since nobody ever scores in soccer, that would put you not in a select group. I mean, a lot of people don't score, but you like soccer.
Yes, absolutely. Terrific sport.
You have bailed me out on the VTI show a number of times about soccer and will, I'm sure, continue to do so. Here's my question. We're down to four teams. We're down to Spain, Argentina, France, and England. I'm not certain of this, but they're probably, if not the four best teams, four of the top five or six going into this thing, right?
Yeah, you nailed it. They are the top four teams. I think the two best teams are going to play each other in the semifinal, which is France and Spain. And then, you know, Argentina, the defending champs, have been terrific. You know, England, which always somehow, you know, finds trouble. But this World Cup, you know, went to Mexico City, beat Mexico, which isn't easy to do. You know, they were down, you know, to Norway, 1-0. They come back and beat a team that's got a great player in Erling Haaland in the heat of Miami. But give them credit. They, and you know, there's a history between Argentina and England, not just on the field, but off the field as well. And, you know, one of the
most Falklands War.
Yeah, that's right.
The Falklands War, right?
Yeah, which, but for England, I think the worst thing was the hand of God with Diego Maradona in 1986. And David Beckham got a red card in a game against Argentina, which I believe was in 98 in France. So, you know, there's a lot of teams in this tournament, 48. But to your point, the four best are still standing. So the semifinal should be a lot of fun.
So everybody that I talk to, and it's not a lot of people, I grant you, it's just usually George at the shack at, between 7 and 8 at Columbia. but he thinks that the winner of Spain and France will be the favorite to win the World Cup. Do you believe that as well?
I really do. And, you know, Spain has looked so good. You know, Tony, they didn't give up a goal until the last game that they played. And, you know, so they've been terrific defensively. They possessed the ball. Then, of course, France, you know, they won it in 2018. They were in the final in 2022, which losing to Argentina and penalty kick. You know, Kylian Mbappe, he's a terrific player. You know, it's interesting. If you look at the road that both France and Argentina have had, it hasn't been as difficult as Spain and England. You know, Spain did have to beat Portugal. They played a really good Belgium team, which was getting better as the tournament went along. Argentina essentially hasn't played anybody yet. They really haven't. And they were in trouble against, you know, Cape Verde. They were in trouble against Egypt. So for me, they look pretty vulnerable. But I agree. I think the winner of Spain, France, will be a big-time favorite. But maybe there's something special about this England team. Who knows? I mean, Harry Kane and Jude Bellingham are terrific players. They're certainly the leaders of that team. They both have played really well. I heard you mention this on PTI last week, that the one thing about this World Cup is that all the stars are delivering. And
stars.
You're right.
And, yeah.
And the stars on England certainly have.
So, Wilbon, I talked to Wilbon yesterday. He loves this stuff. He loves Mbappe. He hated Messi for years. He said Cristiano Ronaldo was better. Now he's backtracking on that. He loves Lamine Yamal, whose birthday is today. He loves all that stuff. But he said, this is him, he believes that Egypt got hosed in the same way that Sacramento, with Chris Webber, got hosed in the NBA. You know, Wilbon believes that the league wanted the Lakers in and not Sacramento. He thinks that's what happened to Egypt in this case. Are you with that?
You know, so Egypt had their second goal called back from something that happened 100 yards away. So, you know, we're talking before, not a lot of goals get scored. Egypt scores this great goal to go ahead 2-0. They go to the, you know, video assistant referee, VAR. The referee rules that a foul should have been called. They waved the goal off, but Egypt still ended up scoring again. So it wasn't, you know, Egypt was up 2-0. They gave up three goals in the last 12 minutes. So to me, they got nobody to blame but themselves. I thought the England-Norway game on Saturday, you know, you had Norway's is up 1-0. They take a goal kick. It hit the cable that's carrying the, you know, the sky cam. The ball, you could see by the way the ball was flying, it comes straight down. England scores and they let that stand. That's not supposed to count. This isn't the catwalk at Tropicana Field in Tampa where that's in play. They were supposed to rule that dead. So I felt like England, you know, benefited from a few calls. Argentina has benefited from calls all throughout the tournament. Messi should have gotten a red card. He stepped on the back of someone's calf and a foul was called and on a, they didn't even review the play. So FIFA, this has been a mess, including what happened when the White House got involved with the U.S. game before they played Belgium. There's not a lot of trust out there right now for FIFA.
I would say, though, as a viewer, and a viewer with no knowledge of soccer, that I think I would rather see Argentina and England than Norway and Egypt. And if you tell me it's a television show, which is what I believe anyway, I think you probably have for giants out there and a chance to get 30, 40 million people watching this thing, right?
I think you 100% nailed it. You know, Norway has a big star in Erling Haaland.
One guy, Haaland.
He's the big Viking, but you're 100% right. Argentina has a much bigger following. They also have who a lot of people think is the greatest player to ever play the game. And there's a history there with, you know, England and Argentina. I think FIFA got the matchup that they want. How many times have we joked around like the NBA wants, you know, Boston or the Lakers, or they'll even take the Knicks and the Lakers?
Yes.
I think if you ask FIFA before the tournament, what's the Final Four you want? It's the Final Four we're getting this week.
All right, so I think it's a TV show. I think all sports are TV shows. And I think you try to get the greatest amount of audience possible. And I guess what I'm wondering about is FIFA gets exactly what it wants. It gets a chance to get record numbers that have never been seen before in the United States of America, people watching soccer having nothing to do with the United States team. And I'm just wondering if there's another hand of God here, and it's the hand of God of FIFA that has orchestrated this and treated all of us like marionettes with our strings being pulled. Is that a legitimate feeling to have, or do you think that's an overreaction?
I don't think it's an overreaction, and I feel like a lot of these calls have benefited, especially England and Argentina. France has just been so dominant. They really haven't been challenged. But Norway had a goal call back yesterday, which I thought was ridiculous. And then England didn't have their goal call back, and it should have been once the ball hit the cable that is in the air.
Right.
And then Argentina. Tony, why is it that it's just a crazy coincidence? Every call that's involved with Argentina, it always seems to benefit them. I think we talked about the four teams they want in the Final Four. If you're asking me, do you think FIFA wants Kylian Mbappe in France against Lionel Messi in Argentina? I would say yes. I think that's what they really would like to see.
I appreciate you doing this so people can listen to it and they can hear that we have production problems in doing this. But because I know absolutely nothing about soccer, it's important that we have you on because you actually know about soccer and you bail me out. Thank you, Frank.
Thanks, Tony.
Frank Isola, who does such a good job on PTI, is always prepared because he's a newspaper writer. He's always prepared. We will take a break, come back with email and jingle. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Aquí viene el buzón de Tony. Recibí tus correos electrónicos. Tus faxes y tus notas. Aquí viene el buzón del señor Tony. Voy a leer algunos para todos ustedes.
That's brilliant. That's the greatest thing I've ever heard.
It's so
That's
good.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
That's Mike Tam.
Yeah.
Might that be is some, fantastic.
Might be some artificial intelligence involved, but who cares?
It's
good use.
It's just
That's great. Fantastic.
It's so good.
You want to do the Bethesda Bagel ad, please?
Bethesda Bagels, we love them. You will as well. Just go to BethesdaBagels.com for the location in the D.C. area nearest you. Then pop on in, and you will be thrilled.
And before we get to the mailbag, let me just say, may your hands always be busy. May your feet always be swift. May you have a strong foundation when the winds of changes shift. May your heart always be joyful. May your song always be song. And may you stay forever. No, it's may your song always be sung.
Oh, what did I say?
You song. May your song always be sung. May your song always be sung. And may you stay forever young.
Yes.
Stay forever young. Is that Rod Stewart, right?
No, that's...
That's the original?
That's Bob Dylan.
That's Bob Dylan. But
yeah.
Rod Stewart
Rod Stewart played that?
He covered it. It's just great.
Oh, wow.
It's just great. Yeah. Yeah, may your song always be sung. You're having problems typing lately.
Yes.
Thanks to our guests today, Greg Cody and Frank Isola. Maybe you ought to go to AI.
Probably should.
Thanks as well to today's sponsors. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Odyssey. If you get the show through Apple Podcasts, please leave us a review. From Justin Johnson in Arlington, Virginia, who writes in the headline, can I ask a practical question? This may be a wild strategy, but why don't they all just kick the ball at the goal a lot more? Yeah, that is articulating my point of view. Why don't you try to score every once in a while? From Steve the Sycophant, to quote the great philosopher Yogi Berra, it's deja vu all over again. Sunday, I get back home, look up the Nats game, and I say, my phone is screwed up. It's showing Friday's game, the 5-3 loss, not today. Well, silly me. The Nats, while losing three games in a row to the Yankees, each one after leading going into the eighth inning, replicated almost exactly their Friday loss on Sunday. And they're 28-18 on the road, the best record in baseball, and 20-29 at home, the third worst record in baseball. Please explain this to me as I start to worry about the Commanders' upcoming schedule. I can't explain it.
Nope.
No one can explain it. No, it's no. From Dina near Denora, who liked her washer in Damascus better, she writes, it's happened again. For the fourth time since we've moved near Denora, a mere 1.5 years ago, my washing machine has updated itself. No asking, just doing. This time I noticed a change. Instead of hot, warm, cold, it says cold and then about five other temperatures. Luckily, they are on Fahrenheit. It's a German company, so you never know, but that doesn't help too much. I am very tech savvy. Not only can I log into Peacock, but every July I turn on my subscription to watch a Tour de France and shut it off at the end of the tour. But I do not know what temperature is warm and hot, nor why I have five temperatures to distribute above cold. So I picked the middle temperature for warm and the highest for hot. I did not ask for this. My clothes were getting quite clean with three settings. Now I might just always pick cold since it's the only one that doesn't make me know a temperature until the next update. Yeah. We all have these problems.
Yes.
Nobody,
forced
leave
updates.
Us alone.
Yes.
Stop
it's working
putting
fine.
Your hands into our lives when you're not asked to do it. You're not making our lives better. From Michael Dinga in Louisville, Kentucky, couldn't help but notice Charles Barkley sporting a Johnny O polo.
Yeah, the
during
tour
this weekend's American Century Celebrity Golf Tournament. Do you think he used the code?
That's so.
Chuck had a polo on.
Yeah.
Do we have a sense of Taylor Twellman? Do we have a sense of what he did?
No, we do not. Out in Tahoe this past weekend.
Yeah, I mean that's what we're talking about, right? This one comes from Anna Walsh in Georgetown, Kentucky. On Friday's podcast, you remarked that teeing off in front of people dining nearby was really scary. Well, I can do even better. I teach sixth graders, a small pre-K through eighth grade private school. During middle school spirit week each year, one of the most highly anticipated events is the teachers versus students basketball game. Teams of male and female faculty members lace up and take on the eighth grade boys and girls teams respectively. At 46, I'm one of the youngest members of our female faculty team, and they are usually only a handful of us, brave enough to completely embarrass ourselves in this fashion every year. Picture the University of Kentucky basketball team walking into the local senior citizens center and asking if anyone there wants to play a pickup game. In our pregame huddle, the only thing we say to each other are these three critical words, don't get hurt. As we get soundly beaten every year, we have a lot of laughs and end up making those eighth grade girls feel like Caitlin Clark. So the next time you're teeing off in front of people politely eating their club sandwiches, just remember that you could be doing so in front of a gym packed with middle school students yelling nonsense words like low-key and aura. Take courage, Tony.
By the way, I have this here. Marty Fish won.
He always wins. He's a great player. He's a better golfer than
points.
A tennis player.
Taylor Twellman finished 8th, 47.
Okay, top 10. He's got a top 10.
Yeah, Pavelski, Curry, Sorenstam, Smoltz, Romo, Derek Lowe, then
Taylor. He lost to Annika Sorenstam.
Should be in a different category.
Yeah, I mean, Annika Sorenstam is one of the greatest players of all time. He should lose to her.
Yeah.
Patrick Vincenzio in Laurel, Maryland. When you're a Jet all the way. Even though John Riggins' number will be retired by the Washington organization, as you mentioned on Friday's show, he started out as a New York Jet. He has such a charismatic personality. Too bad Sandra Day O'Connor won't be there to see his number retired. Come on, Sandy, baby, loosen up. You're too tight, he once told her at a salute to Congress dinner. When he made his acting debut at a local play, Mrs. O'Connor showed her support on opening night with roses. Isn't that sweet?
That's great.
Congratulations to the Diesel. From Bennett Wise, he's a sports anchor at WDRB in Louisville, formerly of WSBT in South Bend. Greetings from Bourbon Country. I moved to Louisville last month for a new job, and my first big assignment has been covering the ISCO, I-S-C-O, championship, the alternate event to the Scottish Open. I think I've discovered a fix for your waning bunker play. Defending champion William Mau, M-O-U-W, Mau or Mo, Mau, I think, shot 2-under on day one. Day two, he fired a bogey-free 7-under-63 to move into contention. The difference in rounds? He told reporters on Friday he stuck his putter in boiling water. Because he felt his putter had gone cold. Yes, he physically stuck his head in piping hot water. Lucas Glover was his playing partner in the first two rounds and said the other one looked black. This one was silver. I've thrown a few and kicked a few and broken a few. I've never boiled one. Might I recommend that for your sandwich? It sounds like voodoo, but it worked for Mal. P.S. I got an exclusive with Max Homan. He couldn't have been more gracious or a nicer guy. Truly easy to root for. And tell Dr. Steve Gerber in South Bend to eat it. Everyone loves Max Homan.
Yeah.
Everyone. Wilbon loves Max Homan. Mm. From Nakoma. I'm sure you already know this, but your classmate Jim Steinman did something very unique in 1983 when two of the songs he penned took the number one and two spots in the top 100. It had never happened before, and to the best of my knowledge, has not happened since. Total Eclipse of the Heart, Bonnie Tyler, and Making Love Out of Nothing at All. Air Supply. Nakoma's a letter carrier in St. Paul, Minnesota. Well, but wouldn't the Beatles have done that?
Yeah, maybe wouldn't it's by an individual Dominic, songwriter, because okay, that was by...
I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe Nakoma should get back to us.
Yes.
From Elliot Olshansky, dear Dr. Potato Head, did you hear that Jorge Posada went on a podcast and said he finds modern baseball to be unwatchable? I wonder if he's having trouble getting the next games on Peacock, too. But something tells me he wouldn't have had a problem watching the game in Spanish. Also, a couple of weeks ago, when you were discussing Animal House, you said you had to assume that the writers of Animal House were Harvard Crimson guys. While it is true that Animal House co-writer and National Lampoon co-founder Doug Kenny did go to Harvard, where he was editor of the Harvard Lampoon, the primary source of material for the film was Chris Miller of Roslyn, New York, North Shore native, who based his writing on his experiences pledging Alpha Delta Phi fraternity at Dartmouth College.
Oh, wow.
Which, of course, Elliot will know, having gone to Dartmouth College. From Terry Gans in San Carlos, California, PNC Pavilion is a mid-sized shed adjacent to the larger Riverbend Music Center on the banks of the Ohio River. Both are operated by the Cincinnati Symphony and are part of a rapidly expanding music campus at the eastern edge of Cincinnati city limits. The new Farmer Music Center is slated to replace Riverbend as the area's primary amphitheater when it opens next spring, its construction cranes towering over parking lots. But Riverbend will remain in use for multi-stage festival events. This expansion has not been without controversy in Cincinnati. The new amphitheater comes at the expense of Coney Island, the amusement park which sprawled along the river in various forms for nearly 150 years. Many of the rides moved north to Kings Island when that park opened in 1972, and Coney died a slow, inevitable death over the last half century. A vocal minority was outraged when demolition began on Sunlight Pool, the world's largest circulating swimming pool, a dubious distinction, but the symphony reiterated that they bought the land and not the business. From Jeff Heisen, Chuck and Roxy number six.
Ooh, wow, well done.
I'm visiting Rehoboth and stopped at Bin 66. It was as nice as you said it would be. I said I was there because of you and was escorted to your favorite Beaujolais.
The Chateau Cambon.
Yeah, I have planned to drink it over the sink while yelling NBC Sports into my remote. Am I doing it right?
Yes, you are.
Just great.
See you at Funland later.
From Dr. Brian, the architect, regarding a recent episode titled Elderly Fraud, I thought we were about to find out, like with the Lilyhammer jacket, that you're actually 47 years old. You have me questioning everything in life. And one more. Happy birthday, Tony, and many more. By the way, I don't own Dollar General. I wish I did. I'm still selling textiles like I've been doing for 55 years. DG. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
Hello, this is Lady Gaga. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Tony. I miss you. Happy birthday to you.
And I miss you, too. I do.
Ohio State sports crowds, living room, Ford style, small hometown, but I've got my passport now. Overseas hangout, see who's by the lake, how did I get this grade? Mom and dad will be ashamed, wow. Dog bath time, roller coaster long lines, pigs on my chest, cause I'm sick, now I feel fine. Carolina sunshine, beach games till it's high tide. Know it's time to go, and when I look up and see the street lights, I wanna be just like you. Three's always been better than two. Mom and dad were with us every step of the way. I see fancy recipe book, bucket hats and fish hooks. In our home, our kitchen's never had too many cooks. Hotels losing sleep from snoring, blow up pools outside exploring. Backyard football, snowed calls, and staircase photo on Christmas morning. I wanna be just like you. Three's always been better than two. I remember the way we were raised. Mom and dad were with us every step of the way. I see all these memories in your face. The world has been our oyster, so that's our three. We'll all be okay. Oh, oh, we'll all be okay. Oh, 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 we'll all be okay. I flash back to all of the times when we were growing up. Some days we had everything in common, others it was just our blood. Made up words, video games, we fought then played, just rode the wave. From being forced to watch your high school sports to being proud of you all the same. MIGLICHI.